That was yours.
Yes. Who's going to look first?
In Electric Ink, Maddox was played by Robert Lindsay and Oliver by Alex Jennings. Amelia was Elizabeth Berrington, Freddie Ben Wilbond, Masha Debbie Chazen, and Tasneem Zita Sattar. Electric Ink was written by Alistair Beaton with additional material by Tom Mitchelson. The director was Sally Avens.
And that was the last in the series of Electric Ink. Something a little more highbrow for you next week, as we explore the history of the arts, starting with the birth of art and how they done the cave paintings. A whopping great clue, if ever there was one, that Desmond Olivia Dingle and the National Theatre of Brent are involved in this one, the arts and how they was done, starting next week.
This weekend, BBC Radio 4 Extra is listening to Les.
The muted strains of a Lionel Richie ballad join in a descant with the clink of champagne glasses. Behind a thicket, a cat was sick. If I'm a pessimist and things turn out as well as I imagined, then I can say, well, there you are. But if it's slightly better, I'll go, well, now I feel mollified.
Let's have a cup of tea, a gypsy cream and a Florentine fig wafer. You look as if you could do with something good down
here. Have you
got
a Devonshire split?
Join Ray Peacock and a host of special guests as we celebrate the wonderful work of Les Dawson. Listening to Les, this morning at 9 and again this evening at 7.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
3 o'clock now, and this is Joanna Pinnock with some drama next. It's the final part of Wilkie Collins' Dark Tale, in which it seems Lydia Gwilt will stop at nothing to get her hands on the Armadale fortune. And then a little later, another 4 Extra debut. It's Peter Tinniswood's very last play, Visitors, written just before his death in 2003. Roy Hudd stars in an elegiac drama on the brevity of life and the frailty of love at 4:15. But now we come to the final part of Armadale by Wilkie Collins. The ruthless Lydia Gwilt is convinced that she is the rightful heir to the Armadale fortune, and now she's discovered an astonishing secret which has led to the formulation of a cunning but dangerous plan.
There are two Alan Armadales, both unmarried. The light-haired Armadale, owner of Thorpe Ambrose, who offers the woman who marries him $8,000 a year while he lives, who must and shall marry me for that reason. And the dark-haired, dark-skinned Alan Armadale, who calls himself Midwinter, who has a poor little income which might perhaps pay his wife's milliner, and who has gone to London to make his fortune, believing that I mean to marry him. And whom, well, whom I might have loved once, before I was the woman I am now. And Alan the Fair doesn't know that Alan the Dark is his namesake, because the father of Alan the Dark murdered the father of Alan the Fair, and murder should be kept secret. And Alan the Dark dreams of death, death for his friend or himself. This is my plan. Midwinter marries me privately under his own name. Armadale leaves Thorpe Ambrose a single man and dies in some distant place. I return as Mrs. Armadale, his widow, my marriage certificate in my hand, and prove my claim to his estate. And all that stands in my way is the oafish flirtation that Alan the Fair is conducting with his neighbour's dumpy daughter. But I have found out their assignation, and I will make a third.
Neely!
Alan, I'm here. Have you got it?
Yes.
Have you read it?
I was waiting for you. I found the place.
Well, you read. I'll take notes. I'm going to make two columns, good and bad. Don't look at me. Look at the book.
Do you mind giving me a kiss before we begin?
I should mind it very much. This is a serious situation.
Well, I feel as if it would clear my head.
Very well. But only one, mind, and don't lose your place. Pick it up. If that happens again, I will sit with my back to you. Please, will you read?
Law of husband and wife. It may be observed that the law considers marriage in the light of a contract.
Is there nothing about love?
Not a word.
Go on.
Here we are. Incapacities. A prior marriage. Having another husband or wife living.
Good. I have no husband, and Alan has no wife. Go on.
Next incapacity. Want of reason.
Good. Alan and I are both entirely reasonable.
Next, it is the policy of our law to prevent the marriage of persons under the age of 21 without the consent of parents and guardians.
Bad. I am only 17 next birthday, and circumstances forbid me to confide my attachment in Papa.
And when one of the parties shall be under the age of 21 years, the consent required by this act is that of the father.
Very bad. Worst.
Would you mind Gretna Green?
No earthly consideration would induce me to be married by a Scottish blacksmith.
Don't be offended. We must try something else. Young Pedgift!
No! You are not to say a word to anyone here. I will not be profaned by town gossip.
Very well. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll go to London.
To London?
What was that?
A blackbird, I expect. Who will you see in London?
Lawyers. The place is bursting with them. They managed all my business when I first came into my property. They'll put me up to what to do.
London? But shall you be very long away?
I'll go today.
Will you come back and fetch me? I shan't run away unless you come and fetch me.
I'll be back in no time. I'll go by the 11 o'clock train.
Oh, goodbye, then.
Goodbye, my angel.
Cry, then, you little fool. Cry by all means. You have seen the last of your sweetheart. Only my devoted slave, Mr. Bashwood, noticed my going.
Are you going on a journey?
I don't want you, Mr. Bashwood.
I could help you with your boxes.
You can mind your own business. No, wait. No, you can take a letter for me. Wait downstairs. Go on. Now, a quick note to the Major. Honoured sir, it is on my conscience to tell you of the goings-on of your daughter, a young Mr. Armadale. I scorn to make mischief, but I don't think the young man means truly by Miss. And now to the station. Leave for London with him. People will draw their own conclusions, whatever he says. And then when I return, as Mrs. Armadale, perhaps a poor widow, or perhaps not so poor.
The fly's here, Miss Gwilt.
Put this note in the post for me directly. The box on the corner will do.
Why have you put on a veil?
One meets such rude men occasionally in the railway. Though I dress quietly, my hair is so very remarkable.
It is so red. One couldn't help remarking on it. But I can't see your face.
One last look.
Oh, Miss Gwilt.
Poor Bashwood. I will have much more time for you when I return. You can have me all to yourself.
Oh.
Would you like that? Would you like to have me?
Oh.
Off you go now.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bashwood. Funny little man. Who would have thought he still had the sap in his veins? Armadale next. Curious. Here I am, running into a frightful risk. And I never was in better spirits in my life. Oh, Mr. Armadale!
I beg your pardon. Would you like me to...
How very fortunate! Well, might I ask you, Mr. Armadale, as you seem to be alone, to be my escort on the journey?
I shall be delighted, but...
You are going to London?
Well, but I'm a slave to smoking.
I delight in a cigar.
All aboard!
Porter!
Oh, that's all right, sir. I'll see that you and the lady aren't disturbed.
But I...
The real truth is that I want to say a word in private to you about Mr. Midwinter. I know that it pains you to be estranged from him, and I think I may be of assistance in this matter.
Well, did you see that? He's made his mind up at last. She's a devilish fine woman. When I was Mr. Armadale's age, if her fancy had lain that way, she might have married me. Eh, Mr. Bashwood?
I beg your pardon.
Oh, God. Is your head bad, Mr. Bashwood? Take my advice. Go home, lie down.
Yes. She deceived me. She's going to marry him after all. If I'd only dressed a little smarter, if I'd only been a little bolder with her, she might have overlooked my being an older man. She deceived me. I'll be revenged on her if I spend every halfpenny I've got.
Well, you ought to go home now, Mr. Bashwood. You got family? Someone to see you, right?
A son. I have a son. But he has behaved very badly to me.
We'll come home to him, I expect.
He's in London. He's employed at a private inquiry office. Private inquiry office?
Yes?
A letter. A letter. I must go and write a letter. I'll find out who she really is, and then I'll open Mr. Armadale's eyes, and he won't want to marry her. Yes!
All right, old fellow. Mind yourself.
I beg your pardon. Much obliged.
So far, my luck is holding. It only took a little time, and a little talk of Midwinter, and of my helping them to a reconciliation, to coax my unwilling companion into confidences.
I'm going to London, Miss Gwilt, on a most important matter. It is a secret at present, but it will make a great difference to my situation. I am too happy to care what the scandalmongers think now, and soon I believe I will stop their mouths forever. I can't go into details, Miss Gwilt. Another person is involved, and the matter...
So he blundered on, and I began to feel a terrible excitement. The great thing is, there I was, alone with him, talking in the most innocent, easy, familiar manner, and having it in my mind all the time to brush his life out of my way, as I might brush a stain off a gown. It made my blood leap.
I declare I am ready to snap my finger at them.
When we reached Midwinter's hotel, I thought it wise to leave Armadale to cool his heels at another hotel until the morning, and go by myself to pave the way for him. But when I was alone with Midwinter, I forgot everything. Midwinter, here I am.
My dearest, my darling.
And now I had to tell him the paltry string of falsehoods about my family troubles, a dead father, a lost fortune. I despised myself for it.
Poor, poor girl. If I could love you more dearly, I should love you more dearly now for what you have suffered. My dearest.
I was on the point of crying out to him. Lies! All lies! I am a fiend in human shape. What can this man have roused in me? Is it love?
Listen. The newspaper has offered me work as a foreign correspondent in Naples. I have to leave within the fortnight. Will you come with me? I can get a license for our marriage here. Marry me. Come with me to Italy. Say yes.
Yes.
My dear, dear Lydia. Dearest love.
You will have to marry me under your real name, I suppose.
Yes.
In the register, in law, I will be Mrs. Armadale.
Yes, of course.
But it must be secret. No one must know. My family...
Yes, my poor love. Of course, no one need know. Just you and I.
How the time flew. What a sweet enchantment it was to forget everything in his arms. How he loved me, poor fellow. We walked out to look for suitable lodgings for me and found just what was wanted. And then in the morning, the reconciliation with his old friend was easy enough. You will see him. He's waiting to be summoned in great anxiety.
To please you, my dear.
While I was in his arms, I felt as if I was back in my teens. But when Armadale blundered in, I was 35 again in an instant.
Midwinter.
Yes.
I am so sorry. I didn't want... I never... I mean... Shake hands.
My dear fellow.
Thank God.
And then the news of our own engagement had to come out.
Congratulations! Hearty congratulations to you both.
It must be kept a secret.
Family reasons.
Family reasons. I understand. My dear Miss Gwilt, you couldn't have chosen a finer fellow.
Thank you.
It's some solace to me.
For what?
A major has received an anonymous letter telling him that Neely and I, well, that we have been seen together. Some sneak from the town must have sent it.
What an odious thing to do.
My darling Neely has been taken to the seaside for a change of air, and then she is to go to school. All communication between us is broken off.
Are you allowed to write?
No. The only condition the Major lays down is that after 6 months, if we are still both of the same mind, then I might be able to present myself as a suitor.
Oh. Well, then all you have to do is just...
6 months?
My dear Mr. Armadale, there is no honourable alternative but to wait.
6 months, Alan. You can do it.
I shall die. What shall I do? I can't go back to Thorpe Ambrose. I'd rather break stones on the road.
You have got a yacht, Mr. Armadale. And you know that Mr. Midwinter is going to Italy. Why not take a cruise to the Mediterranean and meet your friend and your friend's wife at Naples?
My dear Miss Gwilt, what a capital suggestion! Capital!
I have them both under my eye. There is not the slightest difficulty about marrying Midwinter under his real name, and no reason for anyone but ourselves to know of it. Not even Alan would know. And once I am, in law, Mrs. Armadale, then all the possibilities of claiming Alan Armadale's fortune will be open to me. Alan is cut off from all his attachments. He is as good as dead to everybody he leaves behind him. The whole thing is so easy that I begin to dread an accident. But I spent the evening with Midwinter, and I forgot everything when he whispered his delicious words to me.
I must make ready. I am too busy to see you as much as I want.
Go to Italy without me, if you must.
No! I have no life now apart from you. Oh, Lydia.
He has shaken my resolution. Is it that my love for him has altered me? I feel as if I have lost myself. Lost myself, I mean, in him. And we are to marry at the end of the week. I love him. I am happy again. I will trample my own wickedness underfoot. I will forget Armadale. I will forget my plan to impersonate his widow. I have won a great victory. I love him. I set off to the milliner's to see about a hat for my wedding day. I got out of my cab to walk and discovered that someone was following me. This may mean nothing but that an idle fellow has been struck by my figure. I walked to make sure of him and went into a shop.
Good day, miss.
A man is following me and I want to get rid of him.
Yes, miss.
Do you have a back door?
Yes.
Here is my cab fare. Wait 10 minutes before you give it to the driver and let me out the back way now.
Yes, miss.
I must change my lodgings. My luggage can go to the station. The only thing that I need to collect is my wedding dress. I won't see Midwinter again before the ceremony. I can send him a note. But how to get away from my hotel?
There's your hot water. Everything's unpacked. Is there anything more I can do for you, miss?
Hang that up, please.
Oh, it's beautiful.
I'm glad you think so. I'm to be married in it.
Oh, miss.
Do you have a sweetheart, Mary?
He's a corporal, miss. In the guards.
You see?
Yes, miss. When is the happy day?
Tomorrow. But we have enemies, Mary, who have sworn to part us.
Oh, miss. Really?
The hotel is watched.
No. Really?
Yes, really.
Oh, miss. What will you do? Can I help you, miss?
I wonder if you can. I have got money enough to turn the head of any corporal in the British Army. I think it just possible that the man set to watch me tomorrow may find his attention disagreeably diverted. But how am I to get through the weary hours between this and the dawn of my wedding day? I shall darken my bedroom and drink the blessing of oblivion from my laudanum bottle.
Dear old Dad, well done. What a turnout. I see you're ready to be married to Miss Gwilt at a moment's notice.
You have such good spirits, Jemmy. You always did. I've ordered you a nice breakfast. Oh, what a relief it is to see you. You're a good son, Jemmy. Tell me about her. I shall die if I wait for it any longer.
Tell you what. The wrecking up of Miss Gwilt has cost me more time and money than I expected.
Oh, yes, yes. Here's my pocketbook. Take what you think.
Oh, some of it is for the people at my office. I've done it cheap.
Yes.
She nearly gave us a slip at the milliner's shop. I had to get in a man from Scotland Yard. But he knew her. She's a famous woman in her way. And I've got the whole story. She's been tried for her life.
What? Tried for her life? Oh. Something to frighten Mr. Armadale in that.
Don't excite yourself, Pa.
No. I want to know all about it. Don't spare my feelings, Jemmy.
She's Mrs. Waldron.
Mrs. Waldron.
It was in the papers.
Well, I never read it.
She was with a set of card shops on the continent. He exposed them and offered her his hand.
Who did?
Waldron. Well, she married him.
Was he an old man?
Half your age and 50 times wealthier. But he took her back to Yorkshire, cooped her up. She didn't like that. There was a certain Captain Miguel, an officer in the Spanish Navy, met them on the boat over, followed them to Yorkshire.
Did she
like him? Judge from this. Mr. Waldron came home from his ride one day and struck her across the face with his whip. 2 days afterwards, he was dead. Something he ate? What do you say to that?
I say he deserved it.
But the verdict was guilty and she was sentenced to hang. Well, the female part of the court was in hysterics. The judge shuddered, the bar sobbed.
How was she pardoned?
Quite right, Pa. The Home Secretary showed her mercy. But there were some jewels missing, so she got 2 years for robbery. Came out not long ago. So, how's your particular interest in this charmer now?
I would marry her still if I could.
Mad, stark mad.
We must go.
Where?
To the hotel. We must tell Mr. Armadale everything. What doesn't frighten me will certainly frighten him.
Are you certain Mr. Armadale is the man she's marrying?
Yes.
So Mr. Bashwood and his son went to the hotel to discover that both Mr. Armadale and his friend Mr. Midwinter had gone their separate ways, leaving no forwarding addresses. Bashwood despaired, but his son announced that they were bound to find Midwinter at my hotel. So off they went. And Bashwood kissed his son's hand in gratitude.
She isn't there.
Isn't there?
Which of you was on duty last night?
I was, sir.
Did you lose sight of the house?
I see
you did.
Only for a minute, sir. There was a soldier come over and he made it to do.
You've been done. She's given us the slip. Oh, consider yourself dismissed.
Oh, Jemmy. They're married.
Hold your noise. We'll try the church. Cabby?
Three marriages this morning, sir.
Can we see?
Yes, here is the register.
Armadale Gwilt.
Ooh.
When?
About an hour ago.
How did they leave?
On foot.
She's done us.
Well, I'm afraid the old gentleman's going to be taken ill. Here, we must take him to the hospital.
Oh, good grief. This is what comes of putting myself out of my way to please my father.
10 o'clock. And the tidal train, with Midwinter and me among the passengers, is speeding towards Paris. And the watch on board Alan's outward-bound yacht has sighted the lighthouse off Land's End and has set the course for Finisterre. And with any luck, he will drown himself in his silly little boat, and I will never have to think of him again. I have Midwinter. I am his, and will be, always. Since we were married. I cannot even lay my finger on the day when the cloud first rose between us. Not a hard word, not a hard look escapes him. Only at night, when I hear him sighing in his sleep, do I know how hopelessly I am losing the love he once felt for me. Why must he have bad dreams? Now he has me.
He hides it in the day for my sake. He is all gentleness, all kindness, but his heart is not on his lips when he kisses me now. The hours that he gives to his hateful writing grow longer and longer. It's the 11th today.
The post to England goes this afternoon.
It's 2 months since we were married.
I must finish this piece. If I don't submit on time, I may lose my place. They don't know me yet at the newspaper. I must make myself known.
Can you not give me a little time this morning?
Certainly, if you wish it.
No. I can see you are occupied. I don't wish it. Before I've closed the door on him, he is back at his desk. I would have let 50 posts go. I hope the trumpery newspaper he writes for won't succeed. Am I too old for him? Have I lost my beauty? A horrible fancy has taken hold of me. He has been noble and good in his past life, and I have been wicked and disgraced. Who can tell what a gap that dreadful difference may make between us?
Well, Alan's on his way. He sold his yacht. I told him he'd want something more.
What?
He's paid off his crew in Lisbon. He's coming to see Naples and us and look for a new yacht.
Oh, good.
It's so nice to talk to a woman about it, Mrs. Midwinter. I can ask you all sorts of things that Midwinter wouldn't know. For instance, how much do I give my darling Neely for her dress?
No, he wouldn't know that, Mr. Armadale.
I want her to be one of the best-dressed women in England. And I mean to take her sailing with me. And you have such good taste, you'll be able to tell me everything the ladies' cabin should have. She is a beauty.
Do you mean Miss Milroy or the yacht?
Well, both, of course, but in this instance, the yacht. She has mahogany topsides.
Fancy.
He means the decking.
I might hire her for a cruise and see how she behaves.
If only you could take the same course with Miss Milroy.
Lydia.
Honestly, Mrs. Midwinter, the things you say. But I need a crew, you see, and Midwinter won't help me find one.
No, he works too hard.
Oh, my darling Neely would.
May I offer you a glass of wine?
Oh, much obliged. Foreign wine is not... That is to say, I would be happy to drink your health and to the time when we shall all meet at Thorpe Ambrose. I wonder if my darling Neely...
Good heavens, Mr. Armadale, is there only one subject worth mentioning in the narrow little world you live in? I am sick to death of Miss Milroy. Do pray talk of something else.
I beg your pardon. I didn't suppose... When you two are so happy together...
You didn't suppose that a lady's temper could be so easily provoked, Alan?
Oh, forgive me. I have been pining for a little music. I wanted to take a box at the opera tonight. They're giving Norma.
We can't afford it.
Oh, well, I can, old fellow. And it comes to the same thing. I'll go this instant.
He trampled off to get the box. I looked after him as he went down the street. Your widow, with her 1,200 a year, I thought to myself, might take a box at the San Carlo whenever she pleased. I sat back in the box at first, well out of sight. But the music so charmed me that I leaned forward without knowing it. Then I saw one among the groundlings looking up at me. There were many looking, but this one, the eyes. I knew the eyes.
Are you well?
No. Take me home, please.
Me too. I can't stand much more of this.
Next morning brought a dirty little three-cornered note. One look at the writing was enough. An old associate had recognised me, a friend of my first husband. He was waiting for me on the seafront. So, what do you want?
My dear lady, I never thought I would see you again.
You want money?
Oh, my dear lady.
Your clothes speak for you.
after all this time, please.
Suppose I am too poor to give it to you.
Oh, you are a treasure in yourself, and as such I shall be under the painful necessity of pressing myself on the attention of one of those two gentlemen I saw with you at the opera.
You have not the shadow of a claim on me.
Then do the gentlemen know all about your past life?
What should you say if I was rich instead of poor? Suppose I could show you the way to £500.
500? At what risk?
Our friend is a rich young Englishman, the fair-haired man. He has just hired a yacht in the harbour here. He carries all his money in circular notes. He needs a sailing master and a crew. You were once an officer in the Navy with my husband, were you not?
How many friends sail with him?
He will invite my husband and me, but we will not go.
What is your interest in this?
Of ridding myself of the sight of you. You will leave me now. You will never come near me again.
I accept your terms. I will present myself to your Englishman today. If some accident should happen to him, do you wish to know?
No. No communication. I forbid it. But whatever happens must happen within the month.
Very well. What the game you are playing may be, I don't pretend to know. But I venture you will win it.
Please, can you exert your influence over him? A cruise is just what he needs.
He says he can't.
No, I can't.
If I was married to Neely, she could do anything she liked with me. I'm sure you could do anything you like with Midwinter. Please persuade him to come. He needs it. I have found a capital sailing master. The crew are a rather rough set, but he manages them admirably.
I'm glad you have the help you need.
The paper wants me to go to Turin. I can't go with you, Alan.
Turin? You didn't tell me.
It's a better post.
Oh, that settles it, then. My dear fellow, congratulations.
So we part, with much leave-taking. And a few days after, my husband and I are installed at Turin. I told my husband that a letter had been forwarded to me there, but I could not even then tell him a downright lie without a sense of shrinking and shame. My mother is dangerously ill.
I'm very sorry to hear it. Do you want to go home?
I feel I ought.
Then we will book you a passage at once. Would you like me to come with you?
No, it is not necessary. I am old enough to take care of myself.
I should come.
You have your work. Those people have trusted their interests in your hands. You cannot leave when we have just arrived.
Then you must write to me. Promise you'll write?
Of course. If he had persisted in his resolution to accompany me, I firmly believe I should have turned my back on temptation. But I hate him for letting me convince him. I believe he was glad to get rid of me. Perhaps he has a woman here. I'll let him follow his fancy. If all goes well, before long, I shall be the widow of Mr. Armadale of Thorpe Ambrose.
Paper, miss.
Thank you. And so I have returned to England. I read the newspapers every day, waiting for word of some mishap in the Adriatic, which would enable me to don my weeds and present myself in my new guise as the widow of Alan Armadale.
Paper, miss.
Thank you. But as I sit in my hotel room, scanning the interminable columns of print and waiting for the name of Armadale to leap out, I have thought of a hindrance which I had not foreseen. I need advice. I shall consult an old associate.
Paper, miss?
Thank you. Ah. Dr. Downward.
Charmed to see you again, my dear Miss Gwilt. Tell me your news. Have you left Thorpe Ambrose? What brings you to Hampstead?
The news is that I am no longer Miss Gwilt. I am Mrs. Armadale.
Accept my heartfelt congratulations.
The circumstances of my marriage are by no means of the ordinary kind. I am in a situation of very serious difficulty.
If you wish to consult me, you know that I have kept some dangerous secrets in my time. I'm not easily shocked. and I think you know you can trust me. But I never invite confidences. I merely receive them.
I intend to impersonate Alan Armadale's widow in order to inherit the handsome income such a position would entail. Alan Armadale went on a cruise from Naples and did not return. Wreckage of his ship has just been found. I have the newspaper here.
Indeed.
I have married another man, also named Armadale. No one knows of this coincidence. He lives under another name. He is in Italy. We were married privately. No one knows of my association with him.
And if you assert that you are the widow of one, what is to prevent the other asserting his claim on you, this other Armadale?
No, he will not. No one trusts him. He is regarded as an outsider. He is a half-caste.
So your husband's claim on you would rest on nothing more than his bare assertion? And this could be denied?
Yes.
Then what is the difficulty?
My husband signed his name in the register as Armadale.
Yes?
But his handwriting differs from that of the other, the Armadale of Thorpe Ambrose. What if this difference is noted?
The proof that will be required of your identity as his widow is not the register. It must be the evidence of a witness of the wedding who can speak to the identity of the bride and bridegroom.
But as I told you, we were married privately. There was no such witness.
Precisely. So what you want is a ready-made witness, possessed of rare moral and personal resources, who can be trusted to assume the necessary character.
Where will I find such a one? How much?
How much will you get as his widow?
1,200 a year.
6 for me, please.
No!
Take it or leave it. I'm in the process of completing a sanatorium here for the treatment of nervous derangement.
A madhouse?
It is a very elegant establishment, but it has, for the moment, exhausted my resources. Not a farthing less.
Agreed.
Then you must write to the executors at once, asserting that you are the widow and enclosing a copy of the marriage certificate, and I will put it in the post for you, and then we wait. Is there anyone who can give you news of its reception? Someone at Thorpe Ambrose who can be, well, to some extent, trusted?
Yes, there is. There's Mr. Bashwood. I will send word to him at once. He would do anything for me. I have been writing to Midwinter. Why? Shall I be able to deny him to his face? I've done worse. I shall be safe in his loathing and contempt. I will make a new resolution. From this time forth, I will think of him no more. It is 2 days now since we sent the lawyers at Thorpe Ambrose my declaration. Mr. Darch acknowledges receipt of my claim and takes refuge in prevarication. Let them. Bashwood will keep me informed.
I thought you had deserted me.
My dear Mr. Bashwood, I was a married woman, but I am now widowed.
You deceived me. You led me on. I was in torment.
But I have paid for it, dear Mr. Bashwood. I am sorry to say that my marriage was not a happy one. It was injudicious of me, perhaps, to marry so young a man.
You have never been out of my thoughts.
And I did not forget you, Mr. Bashwood. You are the first person I have turned to in my distress. You are my only link with my old life. Only you can tell me news of Thorpe Ambrose.
News? Yes.
In good order?
In order, yes. Miss Milroy was overwhelmed by the news of Mr. Armadale's death. She has been removed from her school.
Oh, poor Miss Milroy. How I feel for her.
The lawyers are in possession at the Great House.
Are you still retained as steward?
Oh, yes. Your letter put the cat among the pigeons. A widow waiting to step into the estate. Mr. Darch looks very blue.
But they do accept I am his widow.
Everyone knows you went off together. I saw you go. Everyone knows.
Now, you must be my eyes, Mr. Bashwood. You must help me.
I would do anything for you. You know that. I don't care what you've done. Whatever you've done.
What do you mean?
May I kiss your hand?
What do you mean?
He's not dead.
What?
I've got a letter. Here. It arrived this morning. I intercepted it for you. I knew you would want it. It's from him. I knew as soon as I saw it. I knew the handwriting. Postmarked Trieste. He says he's fit to travel.
Give it me.
No one else has seen it.
Be quiet.
I wish he'd drowned.
But he didn't.
He was meant to, wasn't he? From the letter, it sounds as though there was foul play.
Be quiet! You have done me a service that makes us closer than ever.
Yes.
You have not shown this to anyone?
No. He enclosed a note for Miss Milroy in it. Here it is.
Burn it.
Yes. What shall I do? I'll do anything.
You must meet his train when it comes. And bring him. Bring him to wherever I say.
Yes.
If I had £10,000 at this moment, I would give the whole of it never to have compromised myself in this desperate speculation on Mr. Armadale's death.
Do you hold me responsible, Doctor?
Certainly not. You could not have foreseen this. I blame nobody but myself. But I won't allow Mr. Armadale's resurrection from the sea to be the ruin of me without a fight for it.
I have sent Mr. Bashwood to the terminal. He will attend the arrival of the boat train from Italy. He will meet every train until...
Good. And then?
What can we do?
Do you see this fly? If this fly's name was Armadale, and you had got him as I have got him now, what would you do?
I should kill him.
Dear me, violence in my sanatorium? In this enlightened 19th century? Was there ever anything so ridiculous? But of course, even the healing art is at the mercy of accidents.
How? How shall I do it?
Do what? I'm afraid I do not take your meaning. However, why don't I take you on a tour of my new sanatorium? I think you will find it most instructive. Epidemic disease, in spite of all my precautions, may enter this sanatorium and render the purifying of the sick room necessary. In this case, fumigation is required. But the epidemic nervous patient says, I won't be smoked under my own nose. In which case, I may noiselessly fumigate by means of this apparatus. Fixed outside this particular room, room number 4, in its own wooden casing. Here one may introduce a bottle and a funnel, and it communicates with the interior of the room by means of a tube.
What a marvellous contrivance. How very considerate.
Now, come and see the dispensary. This way, if you please.
Boat train!
The porter, is this the train from Trieste?
Yes, sir, they'll be off shortly. Meeting someone, sir?
Yes. Perhaps.
In the dispensary, we keep as many of these as we can under lock and key. But even so, we must take great care. The most apparently harmless substances, combined one with another, may produce deadly results. Take this bottle, this yellow bottle, an inoffensive creature, but shake fragments from this blue jar, say 6, and pour over them in 3 doses at, say, intervals of 1 minute. Our friend the yellow bottle in a closed chamber, and let Samson himself be in that closed chamber, and our yellow bottle will kill him in 30 minutes. Yes, just 3 doses, with a minute between. Now, you really must see the kitchens. Our dumb waiter will amaze you.
Mr. Bashwood?
Mr. Midwinter.
I seem to have surprised you. Were you looking for someone else? Have you heard from Alan? Is he on his way home? I thought he might be on this train.
Yes. No. I know nothing at all.
Oh.
Then
welcome back to England, sir. Welcome back. What brings you here?
I'm looking for my wife, Mr. Bashwood.
You have married, sir?
Yes. You knew the lady, I believe. I married Miss Gwilt.
Miss Gwilt?
What's the matter?
Is your wife?
Yes.
But she...
Midwinter?
Yes.
Midwinter!
Alan! My dear fellow.
Thank God for this. Oh, I hope someone might be here to meet me. Bashwood, how do you do? My dear fellow, thought I looked worn. Do you need to sit down?
I have bad news, sir.
What? What is it?
Miss Milroy.
What of her?
She has been taken ill, sir. It was the shock of your news, sir.
But now...
Her family have placed her in a sanatorium here in London.
Poor little soul. If only she could see me alive and well.
I'll fetch a cab, sir. It is in Hampstead.
Oh, my dear fellow, forgive my appearance. I have had such adventures. I have been the victim of foul play. Brigands, pirates, and so on. I must tell you all about it. So good of you to meet me.
No. It is a coincidence. I arrived not half an hour ago.
My dear fellow, then it is heaven sent.
I came to London to look for me.
Yes?
Nothing. Look. There's something not right about Bashwood.
I thought you liked him.
Will you let me go with you?
It is the very thing I was going to beg of you.
They're here. The doctor's dealing with them.
They? What do you mean, they?
Midwinter's with him. It's not my fault. They met together at the terminus. There was no parting them.
Midwinter!
I have found it out.
What have you found out?
Mr. Armadale is not the man who took you away from me. Mr. Midwinter is the man. Why did you sign your name Armadale when you wrote to me? Why do you call yourself Mrs. Armadale still?
Wait till tomorrow, and you will know everything. But you may trust what I tell you now. It will end tonight.
It will end tonight?
Don't let me disturb you.
Doctor!
You have heard that Mr. Armadale has arrived.
I was just informing
Yes.
Miss...
I have told him that it is impossible to allow him an interview with the young lady tonight, but that he may count on seeing her at the earliest propitious hour. As there is no hotel near at this late hour, it was clearly incumbent on me to offer him hospitality. He has accepted it. But there has been a little hitch. Mr. Armadale has brought a friend with him, a Mr. Midwinter. Do you know the gentleman at all?
I know him to be an old friend of Mr. Armadale's.
He's a person of coarse manners and suspicious temper. He was rude enough to insist on staying with his friend.
I should have shown him the door.
Mr. Armadale was himself anxious not to be parted from his friend. Accordingly, Mr. Midwinter insists on occupying the room next to Mr. Armadale. I wonder what rooms I shall put them in.
Put Mr. Armadale in number 4.
And his friend next to him?
Mm-hmm.
Well, perhaps they are the most comfortable rooms. I will give orders. Good night, Mr. Bashwood. Don't sit up too late, Mrs. Armadale. Yours is a nervous system that requires plenty of sleep. Good night. God bless.
Am I to go now?
No. Stay. Wait here. I want you.
The doctor said...
The doctor will not interfere.
May I ask
no.
them... Is it something dreadful?
Oh, go, then. Go on. Off with you.
No. No, I can't leave you. What must I do?
Come and see. This is the nurse's room. If you look through the little grating in the door, you can see the doors to all the bedchambers on this floor.
Yes.
I must go down to the dispensary. I want you to wait here while they come and make sure that Mr. Armadale goes into that room. Hmm? Room number 4. And he doesn't come out afterwards. If you lose sight of that door for a moment, you will repent it. If you do as I tell you, you shall see me tomorrow and claim your reward. Yes or no?
Yes.
Good. They are coming. I must go.
And this is your room, Mr. Armadale. I think you will find it quite comfortable.
Thank you.
And you next to him, Mr. Midwinter, in room number 3.
Thank you.
I will call you good and early.
Thank you, Doctor. Good night, Midwinter.
Good night.
Hello, old chap. What is it?
How's your room?
Oh, well enough. Yours?
The window rattles every time the wind blows.
My dear fellow, I don't mind a rattling window. Let's change room.
I did too much bother.
Nonsense, nonsense. I'll sleep anywhere. But we must be quick. They haven't left us much candle to go to bed with.
All right. Thank you.
It's nothing. Good night, old fellow.
Good night.
Are you there?
Here.
Was Mr. Armadale shown into number 4?
Yes.
Has he left the room since?
No.
Have you never lost sight of number 4 since I left you?
Never.
What's the matter with you?
Nothing.
You're overexcited. Go up to the next floor. There are empty rooms. Find a bed.
Don't.
Don't what? You shall see me tomorrow. Now go. Go to bed. Go to sleep.
I shall dream of you.
Lydia, think. Is there no other way? No. The one chance left is to go through with it. If Mr. Midwinter knows that anything he says might send me to the gallows, he will keep silent. I have nothing to fear from him. Alan Armadale, I shall be your widow in half an hour. Open the cabinet. Place the jar inside. Attach the tube. Pour in the first fragments from the blue flask. And let Samson himself be in that closed chamber, and our dose will kill him in half an hour. Yes, just 3 doses with a minute between. Very well. First dose. Close up the cabinet. Suspense is maddening. Cloud over the moon. Is that a minute? Am I dreaming? No, it must be time. Second measure. Close the cabinet. What if Midwinter's not asleep? What if he comes out from next door and he finds me with a flask in my hand? I'll listen at his door. Breathing. He's asleep. What if he wakes? In a moment he will mutter and turn as he always does. No, he sleeps on. In a moment the third dose. Why does he sleep so deeply? My husband never sleeps so deep. If it is... Open the door and look. Open it quietly. It's Armadale. No! I know who's in room 4. Oh, get the door open. Oh, not him. Oh, please, not him. Oh, please. Oh, please, Matty. Oh, please. Oh, drag him. Drag him out. Oh, is he dead? Open the window. Oh, Midwinter. Midwinter, please. Breathe. My dearest, my love, please.
Oh, my God. Oh, God. Oh, my God, Midwinter. Oh, my dear Midwinter. Oh, what a wretch you married. Still, I had some innocent moments. And then I loved you dearly. Oh, forget me. For someone better than I. I might have been better, but I lived a miserable life. It doesn't matter. It's not hard for me to die now that I know you will live. Even my wickedness has one merit. It has never prospered. I have never been a happy woman. Live, my dear. All your life is before you, and you will be freed from me. God forgive me. Goodbye. Third pouring. Then I go in.
Lydia. Lydia.
From Mr. Pedgift Senior to Mr. Pedgift Junior, my dear Augustus. The matter has been hushed up. She's buried in the great cemetery near where she died. Nobody but Mr. Midwinter and Mr. Armadale followed her to her grave, and nothing has been inscribed on her tombstone but the initial letter of her Christian name and the date of her death. So after all the harm she has done, she rests at last.
You know that our house is your home, whenever you want it to be. Neely says so too.
Yes.
Thank you.
If you take to literature, that shan't part us.
And if you go off travelling...
When I come back, it will be to Thorpe Ambrose.
Mr. Midwinter.
Miss Milroy?
Alan and I are to be married tomorrow.
Yes.
And I should like to know... I mean, I should like it
if... If I didn't bring an aching heart to your wedding?
Yes.
I'm on the brink of a new life. I stand on it, hopefully.
Dear fellow, shake hands. Everybody says you have a career before you. Who knows what may happen?
Who need know? Happen what may. I must look back without murmuring, and I must look on without doubting.
Dear fellow.
Midwinter rises and walks to the window. The last light of the old day meets him as he looks out and rests tenderly on his face. Rose red, the sunset. I am in it. Borne along by the restless winds of dissolution. And as I pass, I caress his dear face with eternal love and longing. Forgive me. Forget me. Goodbye, my love. Goodbye.
In Armadale by Wilkie Collins, Lydia Gwilt was played by Lucy Robinson. Alan Armadale, Alex Robertson. Midwinter, Ray Fearon. Neely, Perdita Avery. Bashwood, Richard Durden. Dr. Downwood and Simpkins, Geoffrey Whitehead. Jemmy and Miguel, Grant Gillespie. And the girl, Rebecca Sayer. Armadale was adapted for radio by Robin Brooks. It was directed by Clive Brill and was a Pacificus production for BBC Radio 4.
And And as Lydia goes to meet her maker, something different for the start of next week, and more drama new to 4Extra. The comedic anti-war adventures of the Czech icon Josef Schreik. When he seems to celebrate the death of the Archduke Ferdinand, he's arrested, and so starts his garrulous progress through the ranks of the Austro-Hungarian military. Is he a certified idiot or a clever survivor? Sam Kelly stars in the anti-war satire The Good Soldier Spike, after the weekend.
Justin Edwards here, just back from
the future,
to share with you some highlights for the next series of 4Extra's very own topical comedy show. Unbelievably, it turns out that this autumn's news is so surprising and so good that I can't risk changing it by telling you anything about it, but if you are thinking of writing for the show, it might be worth reading up on Anglo-Irish boy bands and spontaneous combustion. There, enough said.
Newsjack on BBC Radio 4 Extra starts on Thursday night at 10:30. For details of how to get involved, just visit the Radio 4 Extra homepage.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
It's 4 o'clock now. Good morning. Another short story by Louise Stern is next, and then we're into Tinniswood territory for today's 45-minute drama. It's his last play before his death in 2003, and Roy Hudd stars in Visitors in 15 minutes. And later, a real treat for you. Ray Peacock is joined by Ken Dodd, Neil Innes and David Nobbs, to name just a few, when we find ourselves listening to 3 hours of Les Dawson at 9. But now it's the second story from Chattering, the debut collection by Louise Stern. In Window Washer, sculptures about the voice and silence belonging to a client give Christian, a window cleaner, pause for thought. What sets Christian apart is that, like Stern herself, he is deaf, and the story reveals a world that is at times unfamiliar and hard to grasp, but at the same time is instantly understood. It's read by Harry Lloyd.
The house in Notting Hill had 8 small clay sculptures laid out on black velvet beneath a glass case in the living room. The white mantle above the fireplace was crowded with thick, creamy, heavy cards. Christian peeked at them as he was cleaning the insides of the windows and saw that most of them had a printed Merry Christmas on them and then the name of the sender scrawled underneath without any handwritten message. Some were party invitations and others notices of art gallery openings. The windows in this room took up most of one wall. They were just one sheet of glass each. Easy to clean. Christian had cleaned the outsides of all the windows earlier. Now he used a razor blade to scrape off any tiny splotches of dirt from the glass. Then he soaped the windows all the way down. He swished the squeegee across the top of the window in one smooth motion, then worked his way down and swooped across the other way, then down and across again. After he wiped the soap and water off the floor, he moved on to the next window, leaving the ones behind him clear and clean. The owner of the house was a blonde woman whom Christian had never seen before that day. Every hair on her head was in its place, and the wet day didn't reach her. The bottoms of her jeans touched the floor, but even though she had gone out in the garden earlier to yank her dog back into the house, the edges of her trousers weren't wet or dirty. The cuffs of Christian's khaki cargo pants were wet and dirty, as well as frayed. He'd rolled them up at the bottom so that they didn't leave dirty spots on any of the furniture. She moved around the rooms on the same floor while Christian worked, talking on her phone. Christian saw her glance into the gold-framed mirror above the fireplace, smoothing down her eyebrows with a forefinger. Then, still on the phone, she adjusted the knick-knacks and books in the room. The books were straight on the shelves, placed in decreasing order from biggest to smallest. A vase of red roses was moved so that it was perfectly in the middle of the coffee table. He watched her so he knew where she was. Some of the house owners were nitpicky, keeping an eye on him to make sure that he didn't get a speck of soap on their furniture, but they didn't want him hoisting his ladder up in their houses either. When he saw the woman's reflection in the mirror as she walked up the stairs beyond the open door, He quickly laid a clean rag on top of her blue armchair and stood on its back to reach the top part of the window, then leapt off the chair as soon as he was finished. He'd cleaned the windows in her bedroom earlier. There were no photographs anywhere. Two identical white robes hung on the back of the bathroom door, and not even one hair was in the sink or the shower. When he was working, he often thought of people he had loved and not seen for a long time. His grandmother's close-lipped smile, or the green cat eyes of the first girl he had ever loved. He wondered if she was thinking about him that minute too. When he remembered them, strange remnants of feelings tightened in his chest, but he couldn't easily identify them the way he could the images. Most of the time it was just an unsettling wondering. His thoughts preoccupied him, and he often forgot that anyone was around him. When the owner of the house tapped him on the shoulder and motioned, "Drink," it startled him. It took a moment for him to come back to where he was. Then he nodded and smiled. He acted as if he were milking a cow's teat with his hand to tell her milk, and held up one finger to tell her he wanted a sugar. People sometimes brought bits.